The following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the Upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Good morning. I know it probably just doesn't often register, but you're aware of it when you see a date, a calendar date. It will sometimes say AD, like 2025 AD. What does that mean? Sometimes you'll see, if you're reading history books, you'll see something that'll say BC. What does that mean? Well, BC, before Christ, AD, Latin, Anno Domini, the year of the Lord. And so most of us, it's just part of our common vocabulary without much thinking about it, but in fact, those two terms, BC and AD, actually came into common vocabulary hundreds of years ago, but not simultaneously at the same time, but ultimately they became the way that we talk about our calendar. What that means is that we chart time on the basis of an event. Jesus came into the world. And our calendars are based on the event of Jesus' entrance into the world. We chart the year of the Lord from the year of his birth, and before that, it's before Christ. And that's really common around the world. However, it is not the way that everyone thinks about the calendar. There are some people who actually think about the calendar a little differently. They won't use the year of our Lord, AD. They will talk about the common era. So they'll talk about CE, or they'll talk about BCE, before the common era. So although we are quite comfortable talking about BC and AD, some people aren't. In fact, Jewish people don't count AD and BC. They think about it differently. And in fact, for most of us, if you think about the beginning of the new year, that happens in January. For the Jewish people, their year doesn't start in January, and they don't count the year of the Lord. They think about calendar differently. Why is that? Well, why that is because of what happened in the book of Exodus, chapter 12. It changed the way they thought about their calendar. We're going to see why that is the case. We're going to try to understand what happened in the nation and why does this month that the Passover start in become the first of the months for them. And we're going to try to discover some of the implications for us as well. A little bit of a brief review. This morning in Exodus chapter 12, we're looking at the last of 10 plagues. God is undertaking to bring his people out of slavery in Egypt. He had actually made a promise to Abraham, your descendants are going to be enslaved for 400 years, and then I'm going to show up and I'm going to deliver them from that slavery and bring them into the land that I have promised to them. That was a promise to Abraham. God is working it out for his people. He told Abraham's descendants that this was going to happen, that he would bring them out and they would more fully be able to experience what it means to be his people, and he will be their God. In fact, this is what God explained to Moses in Exodus chapter 3 when he first called Moses to join him in this adventure. I'm going to send you to Egypt to bring my people out so that I can more fully experience life with them and hold out for them a more full experience of life. Last week, it was shared about the first nine plagues. Terry talked with us about those first nine plagues, how God in those plagues is revealing things about himself, what he's doing. A big emphasis in those first nine plagues is there's no one else like Yahweh. Yahweh is God's name. It isn't simply the God. It is the personal God, the God of Israel, and God is making it really clear. There's no one else like me. He puts himself on display, knowing that he will always... We will learn about him always on his terms. He's revealing himself on his terms through those plagues. He takes the initiative to reveal himself. And Yahweh, God, the God of Israel, wants his people to know him, to be in relationship with him. And so there's two parts of the plagues. It's what he's doing for the Egyptians, against the Egyptians, and what he's doing for his people in this program, this process, these plagues, this deliverance. There is new life held out for them, and Yahweh wants them to know, God wants them to know, you're my people, and I want relationship with you, and that's part of what's going on in this 10th plague in Exodus chapter 12. So if you would please open to Exodus chapter 12, and we're going to read verses 1 through 32, and then slow down and try to think about what was actually going on for the nation of Israel in what is called the Passover. Exodus chapter 12, starting in verse 1. Then Yahweh, the Lord, said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt,
This month shall be for you the beginning of the months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Tell all the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take a lamb according to their father's house, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his nearest neighbor shall take according to the number of persons, according to what each can eat, and you shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it until the 14th day of this month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs at twilight. Then they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the house in which they eat. They shall eat the flesh that night, roasted on the fire, with unleavened bread and bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled in water, but roasted, its head with its legs and inner parts. And you shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning you shall burn. In this manner you shall eat it, with your belt fastened, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. For I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am Yahweh, the Lord. The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. This day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. As a statute forever, you shall keep it as a feast. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day, you shall remove leaven out of your houses. For if anyone eats what is leavened from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day, you shall hold a holy assembly, and on the seventh day, a holy assembly. No work shall be done on those days, but what everyone needs to eat, that alone may be prepared by you. And you shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread. For on this very day I brought your hosts out of the land of Egypt. Therefore, you shall observe this day throughout your generations as a statute forever. In the first month, from the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. For 7 days, no leaven is to be found in your houses. If anyone eats what is leavened, that person will be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a sojourner or a native of the land. You shall eat nothing leavened. In all your dwelling places, you shall eat unleavened bread. Then Moses called all the elders of Israel and said to them, "Go and select lambs for yourselves according to your clans, and kill the Passover lamb. Take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and touch the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin. None of you shall go out of the door of his house until the morning, for the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians. And when he sees the blood on the lintel and the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and will not allow the destroyer to enter your houses to strike you. You shall observe this rite as a statute for you and for your sons forever. And when you come into the land that the Lord has given you, as he has promised, you shall keep this service. And when your children say to you, 'What do you mean by this service?' you shall say, 'It is a sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, for he passed over the houses of the people of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians, but spared our houses.' And the people bowed their heads and worshiped. Then the people of Israel went and did so as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron. So they did. And at midnight, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive, who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the livestock. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, and he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where someone was not dead. And he summoned Moses and Aaron by night and said, 'Up, go out from among my people, both you and the people of Israel, and go serve Yahweh, as you have said. Take your flocks and your herds, as you have said, and be gone, and bless me also.'" Lot here. I am aware that many Christians, when we hear this account, we immediately think of Jesus' death and the procuring of our salvation through his sacrifice on the cross. The blood, the lamb, the death that passes over, those are the thoughts that run through our mind. And although it is always spiritually healthy to think about Jesus and what he's done for us, I'd like to ask you this morning to initially hold loosely your immediate connection with Jesus' death on the cross so that we can listen and see better what we're told here in this passage. Is there something here in this passage that we should pay attention to? I want to ask the question, what would the Jews living in that first Passover have experienced? What would the Jews living this first Passover, what would they have thought? And so I want to call your attention to a couple of things in this Passover that's worth noting. First thing to note, part of what's going on is God is making a distinction between those who are his people and those who are not his people. That's part of what he's doing. Back in chapter 11, verses 4 through 7, when he is talking initially about this coming plague, this Passover, he said, "The Lord, this is so that you will know," chapter 11, verse 7, "so that you will know," you, Israel, "will know that God is making a distinction between you and the rest of the people." So one of the things to note is that this thing that God is doing in the Passover is so that the people would recognize, you're making a distinction between us and everybody else. We are your people. When Yahweh moves through Egypt that night, it will become really clear who is the Lord's and who is not. It will be really clear who are Yahweh's people and those who are not. Yahweh actually says in chapter 12, verse 12, we read it, "I will be executing judgment against all the gods of Egypt, but you will be identified as my people." Throughout these plagues, don't forget that God continues to say, "Let my people go." The emphasis is, I have people, they're mine. Pharaoh, you need to let them go. I want them to come and worship me. The emphasis is on making that distinction between those who are the people of God and those who are not. Let my people go. So the participation in the Passover meal is the people's way of affirming and celebrating, we belong to him. That's what we're doing. This celebration is our celebrating that we belong to him. Yes, there's judgment coming on the Egyptians, but the Passover for the Jews who are celebrating it is that we're his. That's why we're doing this, so that we might know and understand that Yahweh is our God. That's what God said he's doing it for. In fact, chapter 12, verse 11, Moses tells them, you need to celebrate this because it is Yahweh's Passover. It's not just yours. It's Yahweh's Passover. It's what he's doing. So the first thing to note about the Passover is that it was for the purpose of making it really clear, these are Yahweh's people. God intended that. God is making a distinction between those who are his and those who are not his. Now the second thing to note is that God intended this celebration to be an annual, perpetual, ongoing, regular celebration. They are to mark their calendar based on the basis of this date. They are to start their year anew with this event. They are to celebrate the Passover year in and year out. He repeats that in chapter 12, verse 14. He says, "This day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout the generations." It's repeated in verse 17. Again, "You shall observe this feast," because this is the feast of my bringing you out of Egypt. And in verses 24 and following, "You shall observe this rite as a statute for you and your sons forever. And when you come to the land that Yahweh will give you, as he has promised, you shall keep this service." And notice, when your children say to you, "What do you mean by this service?" Verse 27, "You shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, for he passed over the houses of the people of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians but spared our houses." Now notice how they're supposed to say that. Years from now, when in fact you're gathering, celebrating the Passover, and your child asks you, "Why are we doing this?" You're supposed to say, "This is a remembrance of the Lord's Passover," but notice the language, "when he passed over our houses." Wait, you weren't alive when that happened. And yet, they're supposed to talk about it as when he passed over our houses. This is supposed to be a remembrance of something. When, in fact, the Lord calls them to remember, it is way more than just a passing recollection. Oh yeah, don't you remember that story that happened really long ago? This idea of remembering is living into what is real, bringing it back to memory that this is in fact our defining moment. Earlier in the book of Exodus, when God is speaking to Moses, repeatedly he says, "I've remembered my covenant with my people." It doesn't mean that God was divinely amnesiac, that somehow he had forgotten
I think I made a covenant with... No, when it says that he remembered his covenant, what it means is I am living into everything that I had promised Abraham. I am carrying out everything that I had promised Abraham. And so when he's calling the nation of Israel to remember, he's not saying, hey, don't forget, remember years ago there was that thing that happened? No, he's talking about them embracing and living into this identity that they have because the distinction was made between you, who are my people, and those who are not. And he wants them to remember that, find their lives lived in that defining moment. This is what the Passover is supposed to be, a remembrance of, a regular celebration to help them live lives defined by this work of God. Now notice the third thing, how they're supposed to celebrate this. It's really interesting. They're given specific details, the special meal. Yes, a lamb and a goat will be killed and blood placed on the door, but you notice that part of it never gets repeated. That happens at the first Passover, but what they do year after year after year is not put blood on the doorposts. They just celebrate the feast. And notice how they're supposed to celebrate the feast. Notice in chapter 12, he says that, verse 8, you shall eat the flesh of the lamb or the goat that night, roasted on the fire with unleavened bread, bitter herbs, they shall eat it. And then going on a little farther in verses 10 and 11, and you shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning you shall burn. In this manner you shall eat it, with your belt fastened, your sandals on your feet, and a staff in your hand. You shall eat it in haste. So think about what that experience might have been like. What would it be like to do that? You supposed to eat the lamb that night, no leftovers. I know some of you love leftovers, but no leftovers are possible. If in fact there is some that has not been eaten, you burn it. There's nothing left over. In fact, you're supposed to have unleavened bread. What is unleavened bread? Unleavened bread is bread that has not had a chance to rise. So you don't have time to let your bread rise. You eat unleavened bread. You eat bitter herbs. Why bitter herbs? Perhaps there's some remembrance there. And then you're supposed to eat it with your belt fastened. Now, I know at Thanksgiving, some of us start the meal with our belts fastened, and as the meal goes on, we loosen the belt. But that isn't the expression here, the belt fastened or the loins girded. You need to be thinking about the Jews who'd be wearing long robes, and you would gird up your loins or fasten your belt by hooking up your garment and tucking it into your belt so that you could move quickly. Notice what it says. Loins girded, belt fastened, sandals on your feet. Typically, you wouldn't eat with your sandals on your feet because the sandals, unlike your shoes, would be outside. They would be dirty. You'd take them off before you eat, but you're supposed to eat with the sandals on and a staff in your hand, and you're supposed to eat it in haste. This is an audiovisual thing that God is providing for them, that they are supposed to think about something. What would they be thinking about? What would they have been thinking if they were eating the meal in this way? I think minimally, they would be thinking, we no longer belong here. We no longer belong here. We no longer will be living this kind of life. We are leaving the kingdom of Egypt, and we are going as God's people into a fuller and freer way of life. This is about journeying into the new way of life. That's what they're supposed to be remembering and celebrating the Passover. Three things. It's God's initiative to make a distinction about their people. This is a calendar-changing event that will be defining for them, and they are supposed to remember, we got up and went out quickly because we are going into an entirely new way of life. Now, throughout their history, the Lord gave Israel seven feasts, all of them to help his people remember what he was doing or what he had done. The feasts are always all different ways of remembering. But they don't all drive home the same point. They don't all call for the same thing to be remembered. Now we know, as we sit here on a Sunday morning, we know that from the rest of Scripture, that God's work of making a people for himself, that is calling people to himself, finds its climactic moment in the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross. We know that to be true. That is, in a sense, the centerpiece of God's work on behalf of those who are his. And each Jewish feast does point in some way to the work of the Son. But they don't all point to the work of the Son in the same way. There's a feast referred to as the Day of Atonement.
That is another feast that God gave to the children of Israel, where the focus is primarily on the absolution of sin and the forgiveness of sin that is needed. A propitiatory sacrifice is made on the Day of Atonement for the sins of the people. In that feast, sacrifices are made for sin. That pictures and foreshadows the sin-absolving dimension of Jesus' sacrifice on our behalf. But did you notice, in establishing the Passover, there is no mention of sin? Did you notice in the offering of the Passover, there is no mention of atonement? There is no propitiatory sacrifice. No mention of sin or atonement. Yes, there's a lamb or a goat that's killed, and its blood is put as a marker on the door to identify the homes of God's people. But apparently, the Passover is not primarily about resolving the sin problem, but about establishing God's people in a fresh way as a worshiping community who belong to Him. The Passover was a celebration of the people of God being delivered into a greater freedom than they had yet experienced, a greater freedom that God intended for them. This was such a monumental work that they were required to change their calendar on the basis of this Passover moment where God is calling them in a fresh way to be His people. Now, I know that there are Christians who will look at this and they will point to the lamb and the blood, and they seek to make a connection to Jesus' death on the cross and the blood that was shed there as a sacrifice that frees us from sin. But I'm going to suggest that that doesn't appear to be the main point of the Passover. I do not think that's what those who celebrated the first Passover would have been thinking. I think they would have been experiencing it differently. The Passover was to be a regular reminder that their God was a powerful God who, by His own doing, made them into a nation in a way they had not yet experienced, and to draw them to follow Him as worshipers in ways they'd only tasted in part. I would suggest that, like all the feasts, this feast gives us a glimpse, not a full glimpse, but a glimpse of what God does for His people. This is part of God's saving work on behalf of the nation of Israel. And that, in a sense, is also a part of God's saving work through Jesus on our behalf. As Israel needed to be reminded of what God had done, we need to recall what Jesus has accomplished, although it includes being forgiven. Don't miss it. It includes being forgiven. But there is so much more that Jesus has done for us. And if we read every feast through forgiveness of sins because of the cross, then maybe we will miss some of the richness of what it is that God has done for us through His Son. There is a marvelous grace work that comes through the life and ministry of Jesus that could be called a transference, a change of kingdom. So Paul can write this way in Colossians chapter 1. He rescued us from the domain of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of His beloved Son. That's part of the work of Jesus. And does that also include forgiveness? Yes. But the emphasis in Colossians is you were in one kingdom and now you're in another kingdom. What's the Passover about? You were in one kingdom and now you're in another kingdom. I'm taking you into a different kind of life. 1 Peter chapter 2, Peter writes and says this: "You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. For you once were not a people, but now you are the people of God." Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I am not diminishing the work of Jesus on the cross to resolve the problem of our sin. But that is not everything that God has done for us in His Son. I am not suggesting that God was unconcerned with the issue of sin when He established the Passover. I only want us to consider the fullness of what God did and has done and is doing for those He brings to Himself. I want us to see and feel what was happening in that initial Passover, so as not to miss all that is included in God's work on behalf of those who are His. It was a defining moment for the people to see themselves as, we are His, and He is our God, and He has done what is necessary to move us from one kingdom to another kingdom. Now, when we turn to the New Testament, there is only one reference in the epistles to the Passover. It comes in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7. And in that passage where Paul is talking about Christ being our Passover, he makes no mention of an atoning sacrifice. He just mentions the new life that we're brought into. He calls attention to living into this new life. Now, there are a number of references in the Gospels to the Passover because Jesus celebrated the Passover. In at least twice, maybe three times, he was in Jerusalem for the Passover. And you might recall that the Last Supper, what we celebrate as the Last Supper or communion, is in fact attached to the Passover meal. He instituted what we call the Lord's Supper in what was a Passover. And that's what we're going to celebrate in just a minute. When the Jews celebrated that first Passover, they did it as a people, because God was redeeming a people, not as individuals. It wasn't just what me and Yahweh were doing, it was us. What God was doing is us as a people. When Jesus inaugurated what he called the Lord's Supper, it was he and his disciples as a group, not as individuals. And as we step into this next moment in our worship service and we are going to take communion together, we're going to do that collectively. We're going to do that as a group. And I want you to participate. You're welcome to participate. If in fact you know Jesus, in fact if you have this relationship with the living God that comes through Jesus, then you're welcome to participate, whether you are a member at Summit or not. But let me make two caveats. If you're a visitor and you don't know this Jesus and you don't know about new life that's found in him and you haven't been brought into that kind of life, then I'll invite you to watch and observe and reflect on what God is doing to identify his own people. And if you're here this morning and you have some young children with you who you do not know where they are in their relationship with Jesus, it's perfectly fine for you to let the bread and the cup pass by them and use that as a teaching moment later to explain to them what this is all about. The Passover was supposed to be celebrated forever. And when we rightly think about it, we get to do that. That is, in fact, what we're doing. In inaugurating the Lord's Supper, Jesus added to the end of the Passover celebration an additional part of the memorial, a new dimension, a fresh understanding of what it means to be the people of God through what he's accomplished for us. Let me just read from the Gospel of Luke about this Lord's Supper Passover. And when the hour came, Jesus reclined at table and his apostles with him, and he said to them, I have earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you. He took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to them, saying, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And likewise the cup after they had eaten, saying, this cup that is poured out for you is a new covenant in my blood. This is what we're doing. We are remembering. That's what Jesus said to do. That's what the Passover was about, remembering. Now, let me suggest we're going to do it a little differently this morning. I want you to remain seated. The worship team is going to continue to lead us in song. And we've got some ushers who will first pass out the bread. I'm going to ask you to take the bread and continue to sing. And once the bread has been passed out, then collectively we will take the bread and we'll remember. And then the ushers will pass out the cup, and you will take the cup and sing, and then we will remember what the cup is about, and then we will take collectively together. What I'm inviting you into is the kind of experience that a Passover was. It was about an active remembering of what God did in making his people his people. That's what we want to reflect on as we continue to worship together.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.